You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
Welcome to the third hour of the show. Glad you finally made it. If you've been here the whole time, wow, you are dedicated and we appreciate it. Hello to everybody watching on the stream as well. You can always do that if you want to see what Parker, Frank, Jamie, and myself look like while we're doing this broadcast. You can always go to YouTube and check it out or watch it on Facebook and go to our and make sure you go to the Facebook page, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie. That's also our Instagram handle. So we start the top of the hour with some headlines. Let's go to headlines from the war. Starting things off, the Islamic Republic said it fired on three outbound ships and seized two, calling it retaliation for the American naval blockade of Iranian ports and for the U.S. firing on and seizing an Iranian ship that did not stop when hailed by a vessel enforcing the blockade. The attacks unfolded just a day after President Trump said he would extend the two-week ceasefire with Iran. Of course, we mentioned before, that is an open-ended halt to the cease or extending of the ceasefire. We don't know. He's extending everything, but we don't have an end time. So we'll see what happens. In southern Lebanon, three separate Israeli strikes killed at least six people and wounded others, according to local authorities. Israel denied carrying out one of the strikes and did not immediately comment on the others. The attacks came as Israeli and Lebanese ambassadors prepared for a new meeting Thursday in Washington toward extending a fragile 10-day ceasefire that began last week. That 10-day ceasefire, of course, between Israel and Lebanon. Finally, the U.S. Senate voted against a Democratic attempt to halt Trump's war in Iran, rejecting the resolution 46-51 yesterday, as Republicans in Congress have largely backed Trump's military efforts. It was the fifth time this year that the Senate voted to cede its war powers to the president in a conflict that Democrats say is illegal and unjustified. No surprise there. For the most part, the Senate and the House will do whatever the president says until November. He said, fingers crossed, and I think a lot of people are agreeing. Even Republicans are starting to come around to, yeah, he might not know what he's doing. All right, that is headlines from the war. Now, more stuff you need to know.
It's a wake-up call in more ways than one. Time for some you need to know.
Well, here we go. If you're planning on any air travel this summer, one, it's going to cost you more, and two, they might not be happening, because on top of higher airfares and fees because of the war in Iran, airlines in Europe and Asia, many of which depend on imported jet fuel, are now facing a potential shortage, raising the odds of flight cancellations and schedule cuts. The U.S. right now is in no immediate danger of running out of jet fuel, but the global shortage is driving up fuel prices for U.S. carriers. They're cutting back on cheap airfares and less profitable flights, a move that's likely to drive up airfares for U.S. travelers, particularly in the summer months. Well, there goes your vacation, Parker. Even if the U.S. and Iran reach a deal to reopen the Strait of Hormuz today, the die is cast for summer travel. Airlines are planning routes and setting airfares months in the future. United, for example, has cut its previously planned schedule by about 5% over the next 6 months. Airlines, and you and I, likely won't see any relief until deep into the summer, if at all. That's because it'll take months to resume normal supplies of oil and jet fuel. It's going to take until at least July, said Matt Smith. He's head U.S. analyst at energy consulting firm Kepler. And even that may be optimistic at this point. Fuel is the second largest cost for airlines, just behind labor. A single-aisle commercial jet burns roughly 800 gallons of jet fuel an hour. Wide bodies generally burn even more. The four largest U.S. airlines, United, American, Delta, and Southwest, spend about $100 million a day, on average, among them on fuel. That was last year's cost. Those costs are up dramatically since the war began. Delta said last week that it would spend an additional $2 billion on fuel this year, even though it owns its own refinery. United could spend an extra $11 billion on fuel this year if things stay the way they are. So another cost of doing business with a war of choice. This story bothers me a little bit, Parker, and I think you'll know why. Texas can now require the Ten Commandments to be displayed in public schools. That based on a U.S. appeals court ruling yesterday in a victory for conservatives who have long sought to incorporate more religion into the classrooms. A 9-8 decision by the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals delivered a boost to backers of similar laws in Arkansas and Louisiana. Opponents have argued that hanging the Ten Commandments in classroom proselytizes to students and amounts to religious indoctrination by the government. Yes, public schools are not religious schools. If you have a private school, you can put the Ten Commandments up, you can put religious verses up, you can do whatever. But public schools are public, which means you are going to have students from every religion and students with no religion. And they all deserve to come to school and not be smacked in the face with somebody else's religion. Boy, in a lengthy majority decision or opinion, the conservative-leaning appeals court in New Orleans rejected those arguments in Texas, saying the requirement does not step on the rights of parents or students. Man, I could not disagree with that more. No child is made to recite the commandments, believe them, or affirm their divine origin. Then why are we putting them in the classroom? That according to the ruling. The American Civil Liberties Union and other groups that challenged the Texas law on behalf of parents said in a statement that they anticipate appealing the ruling to the U.S. Supreme Court. The mandate is one of several fronts in Texas that opponents have fought over religion in the classrooms. In 2024, the state approved optional Bible-infused curriculum for elementary schools, and a proposal set for a vote in June would add Bible stories to required reading lists in Texas classrooms. Once again, if this does not bother you, if this does not scare you, and if you don't worry that someday this could come to Wisconsin, you need to pay more attention. We are not a theocracy. Our public schools are not just platforms for the religious right to indoctrinate kids into their message. You can believe whatever you want. I don't have a problem with the religious right believing what they believe, reading the Bible, saying their prayers, going to church. I don't have any problem with that. I don't believe that you should have to see and be exposed to this stuff as a kid if you're not part of it. And 100% disagree with Bible stories being part of a reading list and added to the curriculum. I don't know why people are standing for this, but it's got to stop. All right, one more thing you need to know. The California attorney and animal rights activist who organized two recent raids at Ridgeland Farms Beagle Breeding Facility in Blue Mounds has been banned from Dane County, except for court appearances. Man, you got to be rough. You're getting banned from the whole county. Wayne, Hisung? Mispronouncing his name, and I apologize for that. It is not an intentional slight. He appeared in court April 21st on felony burglary charge following his arrest 3 days earlier. Dane County Court Commissioner Brian Asmus set Sung's bail at $20,000, barred him from Dane County except for court hearings or visits with his attorney, banned him from Blue Mounds, and ordered no contact with Ridgeland Farms or anyone connected to it. He was then released from custody the same day. Ridgeland Farms breeds beagles for sale to medical research laboratories, as you know. State regulators have documented hundreds of violations at the facility, and activists claim the dogs continue to be mistreated. Now, Ridgeland Farms has denied all of those allegations. Saturday, about 1,000 activists descended on the property in an organized effort to enter and remove the dogs. Sung and four co-defendants had been in custody since the weekend before appearing in court on Tuesday. He and co-defendants Melanie Brianno, Adida Aswamy, Michelle Lunsky, and Dean Rosowski are each charged with felony burglary as party to a crime, a Class F felony carrying a maximum penalty of 12 years and 6 months in prison and a $25,000 fine. So this story is not going away, but man, I've been tossed out of a bar. I've never been tossed out of a county. That you got to do some work. to get thrown out of a county. That's crazy. Let's go back, and I want to open this to you, too, since we don't usually do this during Stuff You Need to Know. But this Texas case really bothers me. And I'm wondering at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842, how do you feel about, now I know it's just Texas, but it's also Arkansas and Louisiana. How do you feel about the Ten Commandments and other religious messages being part of a public school's curriculum? Again, this is public school. This is not private school. So I would love to hear from you on this, because the more we allow this to happen, the more we just shrug and say, well, that's somewhere else, or, oh, that could never happen in Wisconsin, or, you know what, maybe people need a little more God in their lives. It will continue to spread, because once courts empower these groups to do this kind of thing, they are empowered, and they will keep going. And I talked about this the other day with wrapping yourselves in Christianity and try. This is because the big Bible reading was last night. Parker, I know you were paying attention. Did you listen to the president and all the other Republicans read the Bible on America Reads the Bible Day?
I am afraid not. No,
I didn't either. Oh. Because I don't think that's the place for the Bible. I don't think we need to be. I don't even think, to be honest, I don't even know why we get sworn in on the Bible, but I know we still have that. We were founded as a Christian nation, and in God we trust on our money, and there's that part of things. But that's fine. We also have the separation of church and state, which I know people throw around, and it does mean that the government will not impose one religion on the country. And if you're watching, that is exactly what's happening. From Pete Hegseth imploring God's name and making the war about a righteous religious cause, from Trump supporters who equate him with Jesus, to the president himself putting out a meme of himself as Jesus, role-playing as a doctor. I guess that was his excuse. I'm not completely sure. All of these things are leading us toward the nationalization of one religion. And this country is not one religion. This country is made up of fine people of all religions and fine people of no religion. I have to put those people in there too. If you're an atheist, if you're an agnostic, you have a right not to be bludgeoned with a religion that you don't believe in. If you're Muslim and your kids go to public school, they shouldn't have to see the Ten Commandments. It's not the place. You can talk to them about different religions. As they get older, they will meet people of different religions, and hopefully they are open-minded enough to have discussions and say, oh, I've never, you know, I practice Islam. What do you, oh, I'm a Catholic or I'm a Christian. Oh, and they talk about the differences and similarities. Because really, the main similarity is treat other people with respect. Be a good person. I mean, if you broke down all religion, it comes to that. It's the other, it's all the surrounding stuff that gets in the way. It's the pomp, it's the pageantry, it's the exclusion of that. Julie from Wausau chimes in. Thank you, Julie. Public schools are not Sunday schools. I find the loudest Christians are the biggest hypocrites. It does tend to go that way, Julie. I will agree. Thank you for the call. When we come back, oh my gosh. Should public schools, or should college admissions rather, get rid of test scores? We'll find out. I'm Brian Noonan. This is Daybreak on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Want to join in on the conversation? Call or text 855-75-CIVIC. Now back to Brian and Jamie.
If you have a student who is in junior year of high school, they may be taking the SATs, the ACTs, because they're getting ready to start making decisions to apply for colleges next year. If you have a student who's graduating from high school, they probably went through it. But are test scores really necessary? And should college admissions get rid of test scores altogether? That's what I want to know from you at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Parker, did you take the ACT, the SAT?
I took the ACT.
The PSAT, the LSAT.
No. Just the ACT. I had a kind of weird timing, though, because I am in the class that was affected by COVID. So I had my ACT right before COVID started. So I had test scores, and then colleges didn't require the scores, though, because not everyone had the chance to take the ACT quite yet when COVID hit, so...
See, I went to a Jesuit high school where they imagined that all of our illustrious alums would be heading off to Ivy League schools. Mm-hmm. So I had to take both the ACT and the SAT.
Ew.
And those were, back in the day, or even as recently as my daughter, when she was going into college, it was a very big deal. Your scores. She took her ACT 3 times.
Oh.
Now, this is, yeah, here's the thing. She scored a 33, I think, the first time.
Okay, smarty pants.
Yeah. I wish it was my flex. It is not. Then she was trying to get to a 35 because 35 was the cutoff. She wanted to go to Notre Dame. Okay. So she got there. She had the ACT. She had the honors classes. She had all the grades. She's very smart. She gets it from her mother. I'm not so bold as to... Unfortunately, she gets her sense of humor and her ability to hold a grudge from me. But the smarts, thankfully, she got from her mom.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, the reason I bring this up is because the University of Wisconsin Board of Regents unanimously voted on Monday to continue a temporary test optional admissions policy for current juniors slated to graduate from high school in the spring of 2027. Their admission applications open August 1st, 2026, and they will arrive on a UW campus in fall of 2027. These are the high school juniors. So this has obviously brought up, and it's nothing new because, as I said, UW has expanded this, so they've been doing this for a while. But a longstanding policy required incoming freshmen to submit ACT or SAT scores, but the board suspended that requirement, like Parker said, in 2020 when the pandemic severely restricted the number of testing sites available. The board has extended the suspension of the temporary policy several times, including this week. So test optional advocates say requiring exam scores disproportionately hurts students of color who often lacked the resources for test prep, which is a relatively, maybe not new, but there were no test prep services when I was taking the ACT and the SAT. You just took it and hoped for the best. So if you were smart, you were in luck. If you had trouble taking a test, it was rough. And I think you could take it again, but nobody I knew took it a second time. Mostly because at that point, if you got a pretty good score, you were getting in places. Even really good schools were competitive, but not ultra competitive like they have gotten now. Now it's insane how competitive top tier universities have gotten, including UW-Madison. So it seems maybe it helps these students. We'll find out, but because evidence is bearing that out. But those in favor of testing requirements, including many state Republican lawmakers, say the tests make the admission process more transparent and driven by merit. This is one of those very complicated things, because when I look at it, and I know, you know, we're supposed to have hot takes and we're supposed to have strong feelings and we're not supposed to go down the middle. But on some issues, you have to look at both sides and say, I get it. I get that in education, a test score is a test score. You can't go just by test scores, though. Here's the problem. I want people to know what they're doing, but I also want universities to accept students who on paper may not be the best possible student, but they have a lot of varied interest. They've been in clubs, they've been in athletics, they've been in band, they've volunteered in their community, they've done projects, maybe they're in scouting and they've gotten their, you know, they're rising up, they're Eagle Scouts or they're almost Eagle Scouts. All these things that go beyond the test. I still think it's important to take the tests, and I think tests should be part of the admissions process, but not the be-all end-all like they used to be. Tests were what every college went by. But college, in reality, is about building a person. It's not just drilling facts into somebody's head. It's taking a young person and exposing them to different ideas and different thought processes. And I know that's what a lot of people who think colleges are liberal, bastions of domestic terrorism and socialism and all that, all the things they argue against. But really, that's what college is about. You got to go and you have to see things. You meet people, you meet, we were talking about religion in the last subject with little kids. You meet people of different races, different religions, different cultures. You learn about them. You decide what you want. You decide what you like, what you don't like. Well, most schools have remained test optional even as the pandemic has faded. Just two of the other Big Ten schools, Ohio State and Purdue, mandate test scores, and they both have seen double-digit percentage drops in admission applications. The UW system said in meeting materials, Illinois and Iowa are permanently test optional, while Michigan and Minnesota are largely test optional. Even before the test optional movement became mainstream, test scores were not a critical factor in the admissions process at most UW campuses, with the exception of UW-Madison. Most UW campuses admit nearly 95% of their applicants, and so this is a trend that is not going away. It's been around. It seems to be proving itself, and it is going to create more well-rounded students and more well-rounded citizens of the world. When we come back, what's your prediction for the future of America? It's Daybreak on the Civic Media Network.
Solid, better than expected. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning. Welcome to Daybreak. Yeah, the big voice guy told you. I like to reiterate, though, so you remember, this is Daybreak. I am Brian Noonan. Jamie will be back with us on Monday. Until then, you can keep me company at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. You can also go to our social media pages. You can get the Civic Media app. You can download and subscribe to us on Spotify. Oh, my goodness. Dare I say, there's almost too much of us.
There's a lot of us.
There's a lot of us, yeah. And you should take advantage of it, because if we're putting it out there, pick it up, run with it, share it. Anyway, what is your prediction for the future of America? Now, I know sometimes it may seem bleak, but I want to know your prediction for the future of America, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I know on this show sometimes I can seem a little pessimistic, and by a little, I mean very. But it's because we're stuck in all the things that are happening now, and a lot of them, quite frankly, are not good. They are troubling, and so it's hard to look past the future. It's hard to look past November. It's hard to look past, you know, 2020. It's hard to look to 2030 and wonder what will happen. It's hard to look past 2030 and 2040. What is the future of America? And the reason I'm asking you this is because Jenna Bush Hagen from the Today Show, she got that answer from our former living presidents, Presidents Clinton, Bush, and Obama. Clinton, Bush, Obama, and Biden all talked to her, and they revealed what they had as their prediction for the future of America. It is surprisingly good, I will say. We'll get into the specifics in a few minutes, but I don't know if everybody else is going to have as optimistic a look. But anyway, this was an exclusive to the Today Show. The former presidents each spoke individually with Jenna Bush Hager on April 21st in an interview at a private event in Philadelphia over the weekend called History Talks, which was hosted by the History Channel. So Joe Biden's 83. Barack Obama, 64, President Clinton, Bill Clinton, 79, and her father, George Bush, is also 79. So she talked to all of them. And during the conversation with Obama, she asked him whether he still feels the hope in the country that was once a driving principle of his historic presidential campaign in 2008. And he said, quote, "The first time I was on the national stage and I talked about hope, I reminded people hope is not blind optimism. Hope arises in the face of difficulty, in the face of uncertainty." That's the end of his quote. And boy, we are in that time now, right? We are dealing in times of uncertainty, and we are facing difficulties in this country. And I'm wondering if you're still hopeful. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. So, again, she asked each of the former presidents what message they have for the American people ahead of the 250th anniversary of the of our nation's founding. That's right. This July 4th, it's America 250. And what did those presidents have to say? Well, here's some of it. President Obama, remember what's best in us. The basic principle upon which this country was founded, which is we don't have rulers, we don't have kings or monarchs or aristocracies, we have citizens. And if we hold true to that idea that we, the people, had been gifted this chance of self-government, if we pay attention to our responsibilities and our duties, and if we respect and hold on. Parker, I gotta start getting this away from single spacing. Because my I also need to go see the glasses. If we extend and respect thoughtfulness to our fellow citizens, even if we disagree with them, if we understand that part of this democratic project is to sort through our differences in peaceful legal ways, then I'm confident that we're going to have another 250-year run that's going to be just as good. I want you to listen to these quotes from the presidents, and tell me if you agree with them. Because, again, I think all four of them were very optimistic. I don't know if they're just doing that so that we don't all fall apart.
That's comforting.
And just start crying like big babies because things are tough. And we're on the precipice. So what did President Clinton have to say about it? Well, he said the country will survive as much by the process, by the freedom to speak, the freedom to vote, the freedom to be active in politics as by any particular issue. And because it's like it is, compromise is essential. We're the most unique country in the world. This is what President Biden then said. We are the most unique country in the world, in the sense that we really do think democracy is dictated by the rule of the Constitution, and we do believe and we act, we do well, that all men are created equal. So now we've got the three former living Democratic presidents that came out, and they all gave very happy predictions for the future and instructions for all of us. And I will say, as a Democrat, these are really good instructions, and that is true. These are what we should believe. These are what we should be doing. Well, the only living former president is George Bush, Jenna Bush Hager's dad, who, you know, You're welcome to go back. We can all go back and look at George Bush's presidency. Now, though, he's kind of stayed out of the spotlight. And in light of how the Republican Party is going now, George Bush is looked at through kind of a rose-colored hindsight, where we don't forget everything he did, but you look at him now and you go, all right, well, maybe he's more level-headed being out of office this long, and maybe what does he have to say? And what is your prediction? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. We're getting texts about the test scores. Let's talk about our predictions. So here is George W. Bush. This is his message, his prediction for America on the upcoming 250th birthday. My message is, consider yourself fortunate to be part of a great nation. Study our history so you can have a better sense of what the future will be like. And be a citizen, not a spectator. And by that I mean participate in the process, but also love a neighbor like you'd love a loved one. See, one of the beauties of this country is that there are thousands and thousands of citizens who volunteer on a daily basis to help somebody in need. They're often not heralded, but they make a huge difference one person at a time. And again, I don't care what party you're from. How are you going to argue with that? How are you going to argue with a former president telling you, you know, how about you get involved and you help somebody and you try to take care of your neighbors? And those, all four of them, you can argue, well, in the real world, these are just platitudes. Who doesn't believe that you should help other people? Who doesn't believe that you should be compassionate and care? And I would caution you, before making that blanket statement, to look around. There are a lot of examples of this country trying to cut out empathy and cut out any sort of help for the less fortunate. And forget that, yes, we do need to compromise. We need to look at people we don't agree with and have a conversation. Does that mean you're going to change anyone's mind? No. But can we coexist and find some sort of way to move the country forward rather than either stalling it or taking it backwards? Which is, if you look at the MAGA slogan right there, it's you don't want to move the country forward. You want it to go back to how it was before. Because for whatever reason, that's when you think this country was the greatest. And I don't believe that. I truly believe that the greatest is yet to come. I may not be around to see it. You may not be around to see it. But your kids or your grandchildren can be around to see it. But the track we're on now, where we are always at each other's throats, where we disagree with somebody based on just the same simple aspect that they vote for a different party, that's never going to work. Does that mean we can't have fiery debates and heated arguments and basic human disagreements on things that we hold very morally important? No, you have to fight for those things. But at the end of the day, we've got to figure out how to move forward. We got a text in from the 855 area code. We're just going to keep electing Democrats that will undo what the Republican president did and vice versa and not get anywhere. Yeah, that seems to be the way. We put somebody in, we don't like what they do, we put the other party in, and they undo things. And then we just keep going around in circles. But some things have to be undone. I mean, we can't also live in a land where we say, okay, we're going to keep all these past programs. Some things need to be, if not undone completely, reconfigured. And you can reconfigure those things with debate. You don't have to just slash things. We're not talking about Elon Musk coming in with chainsaw and just cutting. You don't have to just cut. You can fix things up. We also got Tyler in Wisconsin Rapids testing in his prediction for the future of America, either MAGA hat-wearing Zombieland or Shangri-La. Boy, those are opposite ends of the spectrum, Tyler. I hope we can find something in the middle, because one of those is completely unacceptable, and the other one, I think, is just a dream of a paradise that we will never achieve. But we can work toward a middle ground, maybe a couple steps more toward Shangri-La. That would be lovely. But it is it was very fascinating to watch these comments by these presidents who were sitting down in a very casual and friendly environment. You know, they were getting interviewed by Jenna Bush Hager, and they know she's not gonna come at them with hard-hitting questions. This was taking the experience of their office, taking what they think America can be based on what America could, should, and has been, and giving us the correct advice, I guess. Parker, do you have you're the only one, well, Frank too. Frank's younger than me too. Yeah. You guys have an America that you can predict what could be coming. I will stay with some of my pessimistic thing. My hopefully pessimistic. That's where I'm going to be. Yeah. Falling on this spectrum. I believe that with the right amount of work, we can get things done. Parker, you got about a minute.
Yeah, I largely agree with you. I think I kind of put myself in the same category as optimistically pessimistic. I think that America's younger generations, for the most part, are going to push things into a better direction than we're seeing today. However, I do know that there is also a strong contingent from the other side of that spectrum in the younger generation that may slow that progress. And frankly, that progress is really hard to find with such roadblocks that are being put in place right now.
The one good thing about what you said is at least young people are now getting involved.
Yes,
100%. And the more you're involved, the more change you can accomplish. So keep getting involved. Tell your kids, tell your grandkids, get them involved. When we come back, let's lighten it up. Your favorite game show. We'll talk about it and more.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Now back to more of Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Wow, that sounds game showy to me.
Feels game showy.
This is Wheel of Fortune, isn't it?
It is Wheel of Fortune.
It is Wheel of Fortune.
I hear it's
very
coming
nice
to Milwaukee.
Tie-in, Parker, yes. Because... All right, if you could play on one game show, which game show would you choose? Which game show do you think you could win? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I ask you this because tonight you have to watch Wheel of Fortune because Milwaukee is featured. Tonight is dedicated Milwaukee episode, part of Wheel of Fortune's Open Road Week. It's all about Milwaukee. It's going to be repped in several ways throughout the show. I never watched Wheel of Fortune back in the day. I mean, occasionally I would see it back in the day. Now we see it a lot more because that's like dinner time, and sometimes we just throw it on in the background. Ryan Seacrest, he hosts everything. The poor guy doesn't have enough jobs. He needs more money. I feel glad that he's finally getting another chance to do something because the industry had pretty much blackballed Ryan Seacrest. He is omnipresent. It's going to be on the wheel as a destination prize package. It's going to be an in-show destination commercial and through signage on the set. And it's going to be part of the Wheel Watchers Club email through the Open Road Online sweepstakes and via social media promotion. This all because of Visit Milwaukee. And they told the Journal Sentinel, and the Journal Sentinel told me, and I'm telling you. So tonight, if you like Wheel of Fortune and you like Milwaukee, even if you're just from Wisconsin, you should be happy that Wisconsin is being featured on this. So the CEO of Visit Milwaukee said in her news release, "This is about telling Milwaukee's story on one of the most recognizable stages in television. From our culinary scene to our festivals and iconic brands, this Milwaukee episode brings the very best of our city to millions of viewers. The grand prize for tonight's episode will include a stay at the Pfister Hotel, dining at the Bartolotta restaurants, a culinary class at Lakefront Brewery, and entertainment at Pottawatomie Casino Hotel. There's also going to be St. Kate, the Arts Hotel. I've stayed there. It's beautiful. VIP access to Summerfest, Milwaukee Theater District outings. There's a lot going on. So, Parker, if you could be on a game show, what game show would you want to be on? What do you think you could win?
Oh, I think Price is Right might be my best.
Oh. Bet,
because let's be honest, I'm not a very smart guy. I'm not winning Jeopardy. Let's just put that out
Most
there.
Of us aren't winning Jeopardy.
No. Those people are freaks. They're too smart. They're freaks.
They're very smart.
Yes.
They're very smart. I will give them that. Also, here's the thing, though.
I can ballpark a price.
Being smart is only part of it. There's also the ability to retain all kind of crazy, useless little facts.
That's true.
There's a reaction time with hitting the buzzer. So you got to have all of those things come together to win Jeopardy. I've been on three game shows.
Three?
I have won on three game shows.
Batting 1,000.
That is a flex.
Wow.
I'm not going to lie. Frank, what game show would you be on if you could be on a game show? I know he's listening.
I'm here.
He said he had questions.
Oh, always working while working.
I know you're always working.
If I would agree with Parker. I think Price is Right. That's like the game show, like as a kid. Like if I was staying over at my grandmother's house, I'd wake up and she'd always have Bob Barker on.
Yes.
And I know Drew Carey's not the same.
You could yodel.
Dude, what was it called? Mountain Climber?
Yeah, the Mountain Climber or something.
I want to play Plinko. I want to play Plinko so bad. Mr. Plow King, let's put Frank on Fear Factor. Yeah, put me in a tub full of snakes.
No, thanks. I see the commercials for that new one, and I know, no. Johnny Knoxville is doing that Fear Factor one.
I've got something. Brian, I got something for you. My sister was on a game show.
What was she on?
She got to play Bozo Buckets.
Bozo Buckets?
The grand prize game?
The grand prize game. That's a very Chicago reference, Parker.
I was going to say, I have no idea what that is.
I was at Bozo Circus twice, and I never got to play the grand prize game.
She got to play the grand prize game. It was like a huge honor.
Dude.
It was a very big local honor. My sister got to play. Because
then she
flex.
Got to go to the Bozo Drum and pull out a card for all the boys and girls at home. Let's go over to the Bozo Drum.
She did.
Wow.
She got to do the whole thing.
All right.
She even got made fun of by Cookie. It was a huge deal.
Interesting fact. I created the new exhibits at the Museum of Broadcast Communication. If you're ever in Chicago, go check it out. It's a big Johnny Carson exhibit and a big late night exhibit, but there's also a Bozo exhibit. We brought in the original Bozo drum. There are still cards in the Bozo drum from all the boys and girls at home.
Did you steal one?
I did not, but I did offer. One of the movers was a guy in his 40s, big Hispanic guy. Watching him wheel that in, and he was like a little kid. He's like, oh my God, I'm moving the Bozo drum. I'm moving the Bozo drum. And I said, go ahead and take one of the cards. He goes, I couldn't do it. I couldn't take one. All right, dude.
That's
and we have
awesome.
The original grand prize game buckets there, and one you can play. We have an interactive one too, so you can go check that out. But playing the grand prize game was a huge deal. How far did your sister get?
I think, funny story, I don't want to take up too much time, but she was under I think you had to be 3 to qualify to play, and she was not 3 yet.
Oh, no.
But for whatever reason, they liked her.
Okay.
And they picked her number and called her up.
The magic arrows landed on her.
Yeah, I think she got 2 or 3 buckets in. But they were making fun of her the whole time. Like, here's this 2.5-year-old, and you got a bunch of old clowns making fun of her as she's trying to throw a ping pong. I think she got a mulligan. Like, it was a whole thing.
Oh, yeah. They love it. There's a great picture of Bozo and former mayor Jane Burns smoking backstage.
Yeah.
I always figure clowns are doing it. Another day I'll tell the story of the 3 game shows that I was on. It is crazy.
What's your combined winnings? Real quick.
6 figures.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I was able to buy a house in California.
You did buy
I was able to put new kitchen floors in that house. And then I got a trip to Vegas.
Look at you.
Not bad. All right. That's it for today. Tomorrow it's Friday. We're going to talk about the draft. We're going to talk about all kinds of things. Thank you for listening and being part of the show. Thank you for spreading the word about us. Don't forget the social media pages and the going to Spotify. I'm out of here. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a great day. This is Daybreak on the Super Bowl News.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.